everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 122 for the 5th of March, 2011. Jesus Christ, it's March already.
I know, dude. This year just seems to be disappearing on me.
All right, I'm David McVeigh, and this is Josh Philpott, and Jesus Christ, it's March already.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
Oh, dear Lord. It didn't actually hit me until I actually started to read it. You know, I typed it in last night, and it's like, oh, yeah, March, whatever, you know. But it's like when you start to read it, you go, Christ, 3 months into this year already.
Yeah.
This is the all-new Geek Actually. This is where we take a lighter, a lighter view of the world of geek and tech and everything else that's like part of our culture. It's kind of a hard show to describe sometimes because on the surface it looks like a tech show, but it really isn't a tech show. It's kind of a geek culture show, I guess, is the way you would want to look at it. We took the original After Show and the Tech Actually Show, we fused them together,
yes,
and kind of created this new hybrid show, which we
well,
hope.
On the floor twitching and
yeah. It kind of looks like the creature in The Fly after it's gone through, and you know,
the baboon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of looks like that by the time we're finished. For those who are looking for a hard tech show, this isn't the show for you because we never get that hard into tech. We do talk about tech, and today, in fact, we're actually going to have an open discussion about what we think the future of tech is going to be. We've been promising this for 2 weeks, and every week for the last 2 weeks, we've packed the show with too much information, and we haven't got to it. So this week, we're actually going to do it, and we're going to even open the phone lines. So if anybody wants to call in, for those who are listening to the podcast, of course, it's too late. We're not on anymore.
But if people are running over to their phones.
Yeah, they're going, oh, I'll call in right now. But if you are watching live, and we've got a nice chat room going right now, you can call us on 02-801-1-3167. Not yet. But it's 02-801-1-3167, or our Skype ID is Geek Actually, and you will be able, we will open the lines at a time so that you can actually give us a call. At the moment, you'll see that we look like we're in offline status, so don't make any calls until we go online, and then you'll be able to make calls to us. Okay. Now, today on the show, we're going to, our tech section is kind of going to be a little bit dominated by Apple, because iPad 2 was announced this week. Not only iPad 2, but iOS 4.3 was also announced. 4.3 does have a release date now. It will be out on the 11th, so it's the end of the week. And we do actually have on the post I put up on Geek Actually about the release of iPad 2, I said no Australian release date has been mentioned yet. It actually has. It's coming out March 23rd, I think it is. I could be wrong about that exact date, but it's around the end of March. So Josh, what have you heard about iPad 2 so far?
Well, I've been following it, and and I know what's inside it, and I know what it looks like, and I have a lot to say about it.
I'm actually quite excited. I don't know about you, but I'm actually quite excited. I won't be getting one because I have an iPad, and I can't afford a new one right now, and my iPad is quite sufficient for what it does. But the specs on the new iPad, I must say, are quite impressive. I mean, it's got dual-core processors. It's claimed to be twice as fast as the original. Its graphics capabilities are claimed to be 9 times faster than the original iPad. It's coming in the same configuration, 16, 32, 64 gig, Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi 3Gs. It has front and back-facing cameras. Now, there has been talk that the camera is a little underpowered. It's not, from what I can get, it's not the same camera that's in the iPhone 4. It is actually a slightly different camera. It's still 5 megapixels, still shoots high def, but it's a little bit more, I think, by the sounds of it, and I could be wrong, but it's by the sounds of it, it sounds like it's a little bit more like the iPod Touch camera, which is actually a different camera. The iPod Touch camera is because they couldn't put the iPhone 4 camera into the iPod Touch because it was too thin. So, and the fact that the new iPad is now actually thinner than the original iPad, which is also kind of interesting. It's interesting that we don't, it doesn't have a flash, for example, so it's not the same camera rig. Front-facing camera is just a VGA camera. I still think a camera on the back of this thing is a stupid idea. I'm sorry. Who's going to go out and take photos with their iPad?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, I just want to say right off the bat that I'm keeping relatively quiet on this because I have a huge article planned in the new Arbiter magazine about how much I hate about this. But what I will say straight off the bat is I think this is the biggest fuck you to anyone that bought the original unit. I think it's a disgusting display of basically capitalism at its worst.
It's a 1 year refresh. That's
no,
what Apple
it's
does.
Less. It's a 1 year refresh. that is basically making the original one the 3G of this generation. Mm. That's what's going to happen. You wait. 6 months from now, people with an iPad 1 are going to be complaining about it because it won't freaking work. Mm. Because it'll be slow, and that... it'll be underpowered, and it's all going to be because all they have to do is release a patch, which will give it functionality that will make it run worse, and then everyone will want to refresh. And it's just, the first time they did this, I thought that maybe it was just, they needed to get 4 out. 4 was their important phone. It was their important step forward, right? And multitasking was something everyone was complaining about, so they were bringing it to us. And I was like, look, I'm willing to accept the fact that maybe the reality is they had no other option, right? But now... now I just know that they're just dicks, okay? And I'm sorry, but this is... Apple is completely fucking over everyone that bought their original one because they have basically made it an absolute... like, if it had been a step forward in more than a couple of ways, I would be impressed. If they had had an SD drive on it, if they had a...
it's got HDMI out, which is a nice touch on it. It is a dongle that you have to buy, but yep. the capacity...
sorry,
is
say
there.
That one more time.
It's a dongle that you have to buy.
Exactly.
Because they don't want to put another port on that thing. So
of
it all still goes
not.
Out of the same port. But the fact that it does have the HDMI out, which actually outputs 1080p... high def video, so you know, which is a very nice touch.
Yeah, like
something should have been in the first iPad anyway.
Exactly, a lot of this functionality is stuff you just didn't get in the first time, and it's like by putting all this stuff in, all that they've done, especially the biggest one is that dual core.
Hold on, I just have to correct our chat room. James from Melbourne says, "Yeah, but you can get it $80 back from Apple if you have an old one." Actually, no, you actually get $100 back if you bought it within the last 14 days.
Yeah,
it's not just having an old one. Otherwise, we'd all be down there right now. Mm. But yeah, if you bought an original generation iPad in the last 14 days, Apple's giving you $100 off. Reason is because they just dropped the price, and so they just dropped the price on the original. It's got nothing to do with the new one. The original just had a huge price drop, and so they're giving rebates. They did the same thing on the iPhone 1 when the original iPhone came out.
Yeah.
A month after it came out, they dropped the price.
Yeah.
And so they gave everybody a $100 rebate back.
This, and the other huge problem I have is this unit, with putting this dual-core processor in it, giving it much more power and a much bigger graphical increase, just doesn't make any sense to me. Because realistically, anyone that I know that I talk to outside strategy games hates gaming on an iPad.
Okay, but this is actually not a gaming issue, because this brings us to the next point, which is iOS 4.3. Now, the thing that the new iPad is bringing to us is the iLife Suite. And what is really interesting about this is not iMovie. iMovie's already been out on the phone. There is now an iMovie for iPad, which is why it's got a camera, obviously. And
so,
apparently it's very good. But the one that's the killer app, the one that is going to make changes to a lot of things, and I've seen it demoed and it's really impressive, they brought GarageBand to the iPad, including the fact that you can plug your instruments into it. You can actually plug your MIDI adapters into the back of the iPad. 6-track recording, completely compatible with desktop GarageBand, so you can actually transfer things back and forwards. It is phenomenal. It comes with loops, the whole bit. I mean, this is an amazing...
It will not run on
the original iPad.
Exactly.
Because the original iPad doesn't have the power to run it.
Wonderful. So they've brought out a program and a software for...
but this is an add-on. This isn't part of 4.3. 4.3 will run it.
Exactly.
It is a $5 app that you'll be able to buy from the iTunes store.
So basically...
But we can't buy it because
the original ones obsolete.
Well, no, because those who buy the original who want... let's face it. Average case use for the original iPad is my wife. She surfs the net, she checks her email, she plays the occasional game of Scrabble.
The average person is buying it because they're Apple fans, Dave.
No, there are many more people than Apple fans. About 15 million units moved. This is not just Apple fans. This is 90% of market share.
People aren't buying it. People are buying it for, like, people come into store, and if they don't talk to us first, they're just buying it because they think it's a computer.
We've just had Callisynth in our chat room say people who are angry with Apple should go out and buy the Zoom and show Apple what for. The only problem is
the Zoom.
The Zoom has killed itself because they can't match the price. And Zoom just had a price drop. I love it. They just did a price drop on the new Zoom. It is now the base model, US, $550. They're saying it brings us into the ballpark. No, you're still $60 more expensive than the base model Apple, you know? The problem is that if you can't get your price on that Zoom to at least match Apple, you're never going to beat them. Not with this much market grab. Not with this much head start. Zoom has to come out $100 cheaper and basically say, we can do everything the Apple can do, and look at us, we're cheaper, you know?
No, but like, Dave, this is my problem with the market strategy of this whole thing. It's like, they are literally announcing this device and saying, and we have this mad software we're bringing out that won't work on your one. I'm sorry. How is that not a fuck you?
No, this is what happens with software. Every year this
happens. I'm sorry. I bought a computer 6 months ago.
Yeah, but there are iPhone apps that will not run on iPhone 3GS because they just...
3G and 3GS didn't come out like 6 months apart from
They came out a year apart. There's a year refresh.
The iPhone 4 was not a year after the iPhone 3.
Yes, it was. iPhone 4 was 1 year after 3GS, which was 1 year after 3G, which was one phone
but
after...
But 3GS will still run 90% of stuff.
And the iPad will still run 90% of stuff, too. But it just won't run the new stuff that is geared towards specifically. And there are a lot of apps in the App Store, for instance, which won't run on your phone because it requires the gyroscope.
But what I'm saying, Dave, is this is the only company that has this situation.
That's right, because they control the infrastructure of that company.
I know. I'm not saying... Look, hey, money is money. Commercialism is commercialism.
Gaming consoles are the same.
No, gaming consoles are not the same. They come out 3 to 5 years apart, and there's usually a range update. PS2 was still getting games until last year. Okay? This is not the same.
Yeah, and there is still software available. And so the way you're making it sound is as soon as the iPad 2 comes out, iPad 1 is completely redundant.
No, but
I think 90%
of
the software is still going
to
run on it.
But in the same way that a lot of the games start to be iPhone 4 only or whatever, it's just I'm saying that Apple as a company just have this mentality that just absolutely destroys me, because it's just like, these are the sort of things that will make me leave Apple's infrastructure. My iPhone 4 is a great phone, right? But that's one device.
But when iPhone 5 comes out in June, which it will, when iPhone 5 comes out in June and has the next big thing on it, right, there are going to be now games that your iPhone 4 aren't going to be able to run because of iPhone 5. But
I've done the Apple thing, but honestly, after actually sitting down and nutting this out and seeing that the increase is not a small increase, they're not going from 1 gigahertz to maybe 1.5 or anything. They're doubling the capacity of the unit.
Zed wants to say that there was a lot of compatibility between PS1 and PS2, but then when PS3 came out, it didn't support PS2 games, basically fucked over the PS2 owners upgrading.
No, but the PS2 owners could keep the PlayStation 2 and buy a PlayStation 3, which meant that they could use both.
So you could keep your iPad and buy an iPad 3.
Yes,
but an iPad 2, sorry.
But the difference being the fact that my device, right, like a PlayStation, we're talking a device that has one sole use, which is gaming, right? This is a device that's a small portable computer, and then software that starts to come out I can't use anymore. It's like, when I see this sort of thing, I'm just like, if I had bought an Android tablet, this doesn't happen.
Oh, it happens even worse on an Android tablet because all the different Android versions between
4.2 and 4.3 can still be upgraded for most.
Haven't even upgraded past 3, and that's the problem. 2.2 is still out there on some phones because it is up to them.
But you can still get the software because it's freeware.
No, but you have to. Your server is the one who controls the updates, and that's the problem with Android. And this is what's happened in America: is that there are people who are on AT&T on some phones which are still running 2.2, and they can't get the latest upgrades because it hasn't been made available to them yet.
Talking about tablets, not phones.
Phones, tablets, same principle. The tablets are only now starting to roll out on Android, so they're a hard one to gauge at this point. But the point is that you're still at the mercy of whoever you are with. So if you're with Motorola is going to make the updates available to you. If you're with Samsung, the software updates are going to be made available to you through them because they're the ones who you are running with.
Yeah, but so, the software itself doesn't have
That's what we're talking about, the software, the operating system. So there are actually...
I'm not talking about operating system. I'm talking about the available products that go onto the device.
Yeah, but there are going to be products. There are going to be software applications, just like on iPad, that are not going to run unless you have 4.0 whatever operating system on there, whether you have Honeycomb on there or whatever. I mean, I don't even know what the numbers are for Android, so forgive my ignorance. But the point is...
They're compatible, though. Like, most of the applications that I've seen on Android can run on 2.1, 2.3, 3.
There's going to be software that won't be able to, because why would you upgrade the operating system if you weren't putting in new features into that operating system? It's like there is software out there that will not run on Windows 7 or Windows Vista because it was written for XP. You know what I mean?
So, I like James from Melbourne's quote. He says, "No, I have a Nokia phone. Each update makes it worse."
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. No, look,
We know from history, because we are very well versed in Apple that they refresh these mobile lines. They refresh them once a year.
I just think that it's incredibly cutthroat to basically write out the last one immediately after the
new one. But they haven't written it out.
It will, man. It will.
I say, look, I'm going to be using this iPad for at least another 6 months to a year. You watch. I used my iPhone 3 for the 2 year period of a contract. Even though a new phone had come out that was faster and had a gyroscope, I still had no problem getting apps for it. There were certain apps I couldn't run because there were certain apps that required the 3GS infrastructure.
That's what I'm saying. It's like things like that.
But on the most part, 90% of stuff still runs. It's like if you were still running XP, there's going to be software that you can't run because it's geared for Windows 7. You know what I mean? But most of it still works. You know what I mean? And don't look at me like that. There is software that is Windows 7 specific. What about when? We went to Windows 98. It actually killed a whole bunch of Windows 95 apps because 98 actually had a different structure than 95. You know what I mean? This happens. It's one of the things with upgrading.
Yeah, but getting it down to a year is starting to tell people that it's okay for that kind of thing.
Well, because it's a hardware refresh, and Apple keeps their hardware refreshed once a year. Even their laptops refresh once a year. That, look, my last laptop, they refreshed it every year. My last laptop was 4 years old and still
ran
everything.
Dude, when Lion comes out, when Lion comes out, it will still run. When the iPad comes out 6 months from now, it will start to become painful to use, just like the iPhone 3GS did.
I don't think it will, because a 3GS is still a viable phone. I can still use a 3G.
I'm sorry, anyone in the chat room that has a 3GS or a 3G, tell me whether it's a pleasant experience to use your phone.
No, forget the 3G. The 3G was dead in the water 2 years ago, okay? Yeah. The 3GS, we still have a 3GS running in the house now. It still runs very well.
As an example, Celine's one, I can't use it. I find it too annoying to use. When you're using the internet on it, it freezes, and it takes up to a minute to 2 minutes just to
Never
stop
had that
working.
Problem.
Yeah, no. And this is, thank you, Northy. It's a fucking nightmare. Number two, like, the 3GS is a fucking nightmare to use. That is a perfect example of what I would say. It's like, it's slow. There are points when you actually go to activate a phone call and the screen will freeze and it will continue to ring until it unlocks.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never had that problem.
Yeah, no, this is a regular thing with
I would
the 3GS.
Say that was a lemon phone because I've
never
had that problem.
No. I've got a couple of people in the chat room right now supporting me on this. Dude, there are reasons that people are outraged with the 3GS. It's like, I have had customers.
I've heard outrage against the 3G. I've heard outrage against the original iPhone. I've never heard outrage against the 3GS.
Yeah, 3GS, same thing,
so,
dude.
I tend to disagree on that one, but because the 3GS, that was its whole point, was it was built for speed.
Yeah, but the yeah.
I feel a rant on Arbiter coming up, says James from Melbourne.
I'm already halfway through it, and trust me, it is full of venom. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, no, look. Yeah, there you go. And Freak's saying the same thing. My wife gets angry at her 3GS. It's like, dude, I'm sorry, but the reality is the 3GS, I literally had people on the day that patch came out coming into and going, my phone is broken. And I'm like, no, that's just how it's going to be from now on.
Wow, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah,
3G,
no.
I got that on. 3G, no. Actually, the iOS
3G was
4
worse.
Update made the 3G inoperable.
Yeah.
And there was actually other people who were saying, how do we roll this back?
Yeah.
3GS, I never had a
problem.
But
do you support that? Is that all right? Is that an okay thing? To upgrade a software to
there
make
were,
a phone?
There were warnings on it saying that this is not designed for 3G. It actually did say on it that you probably shouldn't upgrade that phone to a
But why would you give people the option if it's
Because it's an automated feature. You plug a phone in, it's going to pull the update. But it actually does tell you what it's compatible with and what it will do. Although, that being said, Apple did make a blunder with that one because...
And also didn't allow you to roll back.
That was the biggest issue, was that you should have been able to roll a 3G.
And
back.
I'm sorry, but by doing that and not giving... And never bothering...
There you go. Delta Knight says, 3G had that issue but didn't have with the 3GS. 3GS was a faster phone. It was a much faster phone, and it actually did quite well.
No, dude. I've got people in the chat room backing me up here. It's like, it is a painful experience because, like, it's still slow.
James says, daughter has a 3GS. She plays a few app games and makes calls.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it works. You know, it's not going to play your high-end games because the high-end games need the faster processor, you know? It's just a matter of the fact that the hardware is actually out of date now.
Yeah, but if you ask her whether or not she enjoys using her phone anymore, as to how it was the day that we used to have it, like when I used to have my phone, right?
Because you had a 3G, not a 3GS.
Yeah, no. This is just a scenario I'm talking about. But I used that phone almost every day. When they did the update, I actually got rid of it. just on the spot, just got rid of it.
Well,
that
for the 3G, I would imagine you would, because the 3G was a dead. It was dog. It was old.
But if I had left it as it could, I could have still browsed the net with it. I could have still done everything that I used to do with it. I could have still enjoyed the games that I used to play on it. And reality is, I could have used it as a music player and stuff like that.
I'm going to put money down saying that the iPad 1 is still going to be a very usable machine for the next year to come. I don't think it's going to have all those wonderful bells and whistles that the new one has, because it's a new piece of hardware.
I think 6 months from now, they're going to release a patch which will do something that will slow the unit down. That's what I'm going to put out there.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. I think the original A4 processor they put in there is actually a pretty powerful processor already. Mm-hmm. I think anytime you're going to buy a game, careful when you actually read what it's for.
Absolutely.
Because if it does say optimized for dual cores, probably not a good idea to put it onto a single core. So suggestion is read carefully. But that all being said, there is a couple of new features in iOS 4.3 that I'm very much looking forward to. Mm-hmm. One of them is an iPhone-specific thing, which is mobile hotspot, which I think is pretty wild. Basically allows you to turn your iPhone 4, this is a 4-specific thing, iPhone 4 into a mobile hotspot for up to 5 devices. It's interesting. It connects 3 via Wi-Fi, 2 via Bluetooth. So it's so you're actually connecting via Bluetooth for that one. So I thought that was intriguing that they've broken up the aerial traffic that way. Mm. But the downside to it is you actually have to have that extra data plan, which I object to completely. And this is not an Apple thing. This is a phone server thing. Mm. I object to it completely, and I'll tell you why I object to this. And this is the same in America. It's the same in England. This whole you have to have a tethering data package. I have 2 gigs of data on my phone. How I use that 2 gigs of data should be completely up to me. Mm. If I want to hook a laptop in, tether a laptop, and use my 2 gigs of data on the laptop from my phone, what difference does that make to a phone carrier?
It's an easy way to make more money out
Absolutely. And in the old days, I used to have a Nokia N90, which actually allowed you to tether it. You used to tether it by USB, tether it and use it as a modem. No extra charges on that. You just plug it in and it would connect, you know? And it's this modern thing of creating tethering plans. Mm. Optus has free tethering. No, it doesn't, Northy. I'm with Optus.
Some plans do.
Oh, really? Mine's an extra $10.
The customer was telling me that a couple of days ago as well.
No, on my plan, if I want to tether, it's an extra $10 and I get an extra 2 gigs. But you have to pay the $10 per month to get the tethering plan put onto it. And I look at it and go, I don't want the extra 2 gigs. I just want to tether, you know? And why is it tethering? Heh, you know? Anyway, so that is one of the new features that I actually really like about iOS 4.3. There was something else. What was the other one? There was another. Hang on, I'm going to bring up the 4.3. There was one other feature that I thought was actually pretty neat.
They are expanding on the ability to do AirPlay. That was one of the
That was yet. Oh, yes. This was actually an iPad thing in particular. Apparently, you can now AirPlay apps on the iPad. So if you've got 4.3, and I don't know if this works with iPad 1, but it's an iPad 2, will definitely work. No, it's part of 4.3. It should work with iPad 1, theoretically, which allows you to AirPlay. So if you're running an app, you can actually flick the app basically onto a TV screen and play it on the machine, but you've got it on the screen.
I really honestly hope that it's an iPad 2 only thing, because that totally supports what I'm saying.
The other one that is, actually it's not iPad, because this is actually all iOS 4.3. So 4.3 also has, and it actually has, the other one that I really liked was iTunes Home Sharing. Now, for those who don't use Home Sharing, what it basically allows you to do is you activate Home Sharing. We've got it in this house. So we have one master iTunes library, and all the other Macs don't actually have to have the iTunes library. They have Home Share, so as long as this one is on, they have access to everything that is actually in the master library and the ability to copy them. So you can just drag and drop them around. The new iOS 4.3 will also have Home Sharing built into it, which means from your phone, if you're in the house or in your Wi-Fi network, you can just access your iTunes library wirelessly.
That's badass.
Badass.
That's a great, great add-in.
And most importantly, this is the one I was trying to remember.
And I will admit defeat on this and say that Dave was right.
Most importantly, they're bringing back the rotation lock on the iPad.
Look,
so
got one, and after I've had this happen, yes, I admit I would very much like to have the button back.
Yes, it's
going to
be software switchable. So in your settings, you're going to be.
It's a great way to not admit you were wrong.
And Forstall on the announcement actually said one of our most listener requested things was no shit, you shouldn't have taken it away in the first place. Delta Knight says, oh my fucking god, Apple listened. So they're making
They just couldn't shut us up.
They're making it software switchable, so you'll be able to actually decide whether the switch on the side of the iPad is a mute switch or a rotation lock. And I think I can say right now, without any doubt, we'll both be putting it on rotation lock.
Oh, yeah.
So the rotation lock is back, personal hotspot for iPhone 4. I was listening to one of the TechPods podcasts the other day, and they were saying, iOS 4.3 is great. It's going to turn your iPad into a hotspot. No. It's an iPhone 4 only. Yeah, it's an iPhone 4 thing. It's not the iOS 4.3 will come out for both devices, but each device has their own things.
I wonder how much more it is on my one.
I don't know. I'm going to look into it. I got to find out what it is. You know what? For those who have MiFis already and your own contracts for MiFis, it's kind of pointless. But if you don't have a MiFi, this is the replacement for getting a MiFi. Mm. You know, and a MiFi, for those who don't know, is a little portable Wi-Fi that you carry around in your pocket. It has a data plan. Mm. I have one. Josh has got one. When you're out and about, you can hook your laptop into it. You can hook your iPad into it, and so forth. What it means is that I think you're going to see a plummet in 3G iPad sales.
Yeah,
because people who have their iPhones will just get a data plan and a Wi-Fi iPad, and they'll be able to run the two of them in conjunction. So anyway, so that's 4.3. It's got all the usual things. The only thing they didn't do anything about, which I was really hoping they would do something about, is adding Bonjour to AirPrint so that you could actually use any networked printer. They didn't. That was actually one of the things they promised to us originally with AirPrint, and they still haven't brought
that. Yeah, they tend to have an ability to forget things
they
like
do,
that.
Especially when they can't make them work. We don't have AirPrint fixed yet, so there's still only that selection of, 12 or 14 printers or something like that that actually support AirPrint. So it's a bit of a dead. I really want printing on my iPad. That's the one thing I really want is printing. But I don't have that. And there was actually one other little bit I was going to add on that, but I've forgotten. If it comes back to me, I'll bring it up later on. Okay, let's move away from Apple. We've got our hate out. Let's move away. We're just going to run through a couple of things really fast, and that's going to lead into our discussion. First thing is, because this is all futurist type stuff. First of all, look, I've got the show notes here. I've got Technology Beats Truancy. That's actually last week's story. Ignore that one. I didn't cut that one out. First of all, I'm going to say, you know those 3D printers? And I should remind people that a lot of our show notes, in fact, most of our show notes actually come from Delta Knight in our chat room. Mm-hmm. David Murray, he's our researcher. Thank you very much. He brought this up, which I thought was really neat. You know those 3D printers that can actually print components? This is a fully 3D printed car. They're saying it's the future of cars. It's the 3D printer prints the whole car body. The car is as green as they come. It's a hybrid. And they're basically saying that the process is actually very cheap. It's only a demo at this point. It's only to prove it can be done. But this literally changes the future of car manufacture. All those plants and factories and, you know, we're getting to a whole different thing. They're also saying that it gets 85 kilometers a liter on the highway because of the hybrid nature of it. It's pretty amazing. It's called the, what's it called again? It actually has a name. Something like that. I forget what it's called.
Fortis.
Now. The Fortis.
No. That's the company.
Oh, no, the Irby. The Irby. Every exterior component of the Irby, including the windscreen, was made using dimensional 3D printers. Amazing.
So nuts.
I think that's so cool. Anyway, so that's in our show notes, and you can have a look at that. So there's one stage of the future. It's a really ugly car, though. I'm sorry. It's very like, you know, something out of Back to the Future 3, you know? Back to the Future 2, I should say. Come back to that one in a second. Leading into our discussion. No, I better do this first, because otherwise we're going to miss it and we'll forget about it. Listener Clara Tungle. Now, Clara Tungle is in our chat room.
In our chat room, right.
Excellent.
Now.
Listen, Clara Tungle sent us a couple links. I've got one here. We couldn't use them both, unfortunately. But we got one of them because it just tickled me, which Sydney Morning Herald is actually reporting that two British schoolboys have just been jailed for up to 5 years because they were running what has been termed as the antisocial network. And it was called Crime Book. And it was basically a Facebook for criminals where they could get together and plan their robberies and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And they have
called it Crime Book.
They called it Crime Book. And they have been caught, and they are now It says here that information about 65,000 hacked bank accounts was also shared on the site.
Wow.
So all sorts of wonderful stuff was being... Now, when we say that there are schoolboys, let's get this very clear. I want to make this very clear because we have this happen all the time where they say, kids built a bomb that they, you know, discovered the stuff on the internet.
They
and
were
then you
like
find
19,
out, and you find
they?
Out they were 19. These two British schoolboys were 19 and 18. They were tried as adults, all yeah. right? They knew what they were doing. Okay, so let's be very clear that they weren't kids, all right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. Crime Book didn't seem to take off quite as quickly as Facebook, so yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, they did manage to... what is it that says here? They were jailed for 5 years for running a $26 million Facebook-style website for criminals.
Wow.
Dubbed Crime Book. I don't have to know if the actual site... They started operating a forum called ghostmarket.net. I don't know if it was ever actually called Crime Book, but that's what it was kind of dubbed. Lord. But I thought that was really, really interesting. That this, you know, I just look at it and go, wow, the way people communicate with each other. And we got another one coming up at the end of the show, which we'll come back to. Let's talk about futurism, though. And let's say that Ruslan Kogan, and if that name is not a household name to you yet, if you've ever seen the products, Kogan products, like TVs and stuff like that, they're only available online. They're an Australian company. This guy has been taking on Harvey Norman head-to-head. Basically, Harvey Norman has gone public yelling about this guy many times, basically saying he's killing brick-and-mortar stores. Because basically, he is releasing an Australian, not built, obviously, it's probably built in China, but Australian-designed product called Kogan products, and they're basically imported products from overseas. He sells them online really cheap. TV, stereos, all this sort of Kogan brand stuff. And basically, he's been a thorn in brick-and-mortar brick-and-mortar stores for a while because they're all basically saying, we can't compete with this guy. And all I can think is, we'll keep up. You know, this is the future. He actually went... gave a speech at Queensland's Gold Coast. Queensland Gold Coast had a thing called Kickstart Forum, yeah. and he gave a speech at Kickstart where he basically said that all of the Australian retailers, pretty much, he cited JB Hi-Fi in particular as being Apple's bitch, and basically said that because of Apple's online retail store and their retail stores, brick-and-mortar stores, all these stores are generating huge income from Apple products, and at any moment, Apple could just turn around and say, we're taking all product back because we've got our own retail outlet now. And he's basically saying all of these retailers have been completely duped by Apple and made basically into his words, Apple's bitch, you know? Yeah. So as a retailer, what do you think of this?
Well, look, I mean, you know, we'll be careful what I say here, but look, I get what he's saying. I really do. And I really get what he means by that. I mean, realistically, we are all just feeding the teat that is
Apple.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we're just literally pouring sales through the door.
Well, and
for them.
One of his points, and this is, we'll bring this up. One of his points is that there is no further connection with that customer once they have their products. So you sell them, let's say a laptop, right? They walk out of the store. If they now need anything for their laptop, they go to the Apple store. Because the Apple Store has the support, it has the Genius Bars, it has all of the warranty stuff, blah, 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 you know, all this sort of stuff. And so basically all the retailers, we're not talking about JB specifically, all the retailers who carry Apple product are basically the selling machine to build Apple's infrastructure. Because Apple has the infrastructure and they're not giving it to you guys. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Look, I mean, it's a terrifying thought to think that Apple could basically pull out or just start sticking stores beside every other retail store to wipe
which is
them
what
out.
They've systematically been doing.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Apple is basically trying to create an infrastructure where they don't need anyone else, which is why they have no respect for the people outside their situation. So, like, the people that are involved in them, there's very little support and so on and so forth, if you're not a ridiculously huge store. But, look, I mean, I think there's still viable amounts of sales going through the door either way. So, I mean, I think realistically both need to exist. I don't think you can ever go fully online. I think it's very important to have brick-and-mortar stores.
Well, and this is,
I think it's very important to have someone you can sit down on a personal basis and have a look at these situations.
See, like, this is and see, but Kogan would actually disagree with you at this because he says here that... Kogan has sold over 200,000 products, expanded internationally, and has become, as he described, Australia's only international consumer electronics brand.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, let me say one thing. grandma and grandpa are never going to buy from him. And I'm not talking about because they don't get online. They're never going to buy from him because they don't know how to use a computer or they need help with the TV setup and so on and so forth. These things cannot be done online. It's the same sort of reason that people hate these online and impersonal phone message systems where you have to press 1 and then 2 and then 5 and then 79
to get through. If you'd like to hear this in English.
Exactly. And to get through a whole wave of things to get to something and then at the end be shot out the other end and said, I'm sorry, we can't help you in the chain of things. Please call back and try and use the number system again. It's like if you take out the personal aspect, there's no one to help you out. And that's why I don't believe that it will ever completely go away.
We've had a bunch of stuff in the chat room about this. Skeleton says he got a 30-inch LCD with built-in DVD PVR for $300 free shipping. He says Kogan is great.
Oh, no, I don't have a problem with it.
No,
I
no, think but the, it goes on. We've got Zed saying Meyer now has an online store that ships from outside Australia to avoid GST. Freak says Apple wants a world that is akin to Wall-E's world. all right, we have, what have we got? There was another one that I saw. Sorry, it says, sorry, if Jerry was smart, Jerry, this is Jerry Harvey from Harvey Norman, he'd say he would go online and sell online too. They do actually have an online store, but it's useless. And it doesn't, it's no cheaper than buying in store, which an online store needs to be because the concept is there's no staff, there's no brick and mortar, there's no rent. You should be able to do it cheaper. So, but yeah, they do have, and I've always said Harvey Norman's online service sucks. It needs to be as comprehensive as their in-store. Yeah. But yeah, no, I see his point, though. I do see his point about the fact that, I mean, Apple has done this before.
Look, it's not just, let's actually, and this feels really weird saying that after, you know, sort of everything I've said. Let's take the weight off Apple. This isn't Apple's fault, and it's not, if anyone's to blame, it's not Apple for this. It's the people that are connecting to Apple and making Apple such a big bit of their business. Realistically, both worlds need to exist, but I think retail needs to really sit down and recalibrate what they do in store and redefine how they do it. As an example, a brilliant company would be able to organize something like an online store that would then, you would make the purchase in store and support would be available at the local branch. Or, yeah, it, like you buy it and then you don't have your HDMI cable and it's like, for further support on this, go to your local JB Hi-Fi or whatever, or your local Harvey Norman or whatever. So you're putting the two together. There don't need to be two.
Yeah, I agree. And in America, they actually started this, and I will say that it comes from a very unlikely source, which is Microsoft, which has never been big on customer service.
Yeah.
But in America, for a while there, before they started opening copycat Microsoft stores, there was actually, you know how they've got their copy of the Genius Bar, which they call the Guru Bar, right? Which I can't stand that phrase. But the Guru Bar, what they did with the Best Buy and stuff in America was they were actually putting Guru Bars into the Best Buy stores. This is before they started opening their own stores, which is a great idea because it means you could go into a department store, buy your computer, but there was Microsoft tech support right there in store to help people. Maybe that's what they need to do. Maybe they just need to start putting an Apple Genius into each retail store as well, you know? Yeah. So that there is that sort of that support. Not a whole bar, but maybe one Apple Genius who's hired by Apple, you know, paid for by Apple to be in the retail store. It would show good faith to those retailers.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to go into the whole, I think some of Russell and Kogan's statements have been incredibly inflammatory over the last couple of years that I've been hearing about him. But he does make some interesting points.
Look, I think that the retail needs to be grabbed and shook as hard as it possibly can because we have to accept the fact that things need to be looked at. And it's like we have such a system set in place, everybody's afraid to change it. But realistically, the concept of sticking the two together is, you know, one of the things you don't particularly want to do. Look, there is part of me as someone that works in sales that sits there and goes, the internet would be a much better way because for people like me, my life would be a hell of a lot less stressful if I worked there organizing these things. And the great thing about buying online means that you take out that bit that basically people can just run into a store and just yell and scream until they get what they want. That doesn't happen with an internet store. I mean, that's one reason some people would like it.
I think Callison says Borders has a pretty good online store now. Well, they would have to, Callison, if they're closing Borders down. So in America, they've just closed a whole bunch of Borders stores, and I think they're closing some here too. So I think they're going completely online because they're suffering. It's like Blockbuster has looks like it's finally bitten the bullet. They filed Chapter 11 in America many months ago now, but it looks like they're actually starting to just shut it down now, liquidate it, because it's dying. Online is taking over, you know?
No, I wouldn't. Nordy's asking whether or not I'd feel safe if we went completely online. No, I wouldn't.
No, you still need to have people to talk to. And this was the genius of the marketing strategy of Apple, to open those retail stores, to make it so that if you buy their product, you're looked after from that point onwards. You have that bar at the back where you can walk in at any time and basically say, I got a question, you know, and it's free, you know. That it's genius. And this is what has become so popular about the Apple stores, is that infrastructure that they've built up. And this is why their sales are going through the roof at the moment, you know. Anyway, now, to lead us into this discussion, this opinion piece, Delta sent us an article that says 14 ways to replace your wallet. And I thought, wow, yes, that is actually a very interesting point, because that is actually kind of like the lead up to this. We're still bound by having all these little bits and pieces and stuff like that. And I actually think that the future will be less. We'll be carrying a lot less with us. It does kind of scare me, the idea of having one thing, though, because if you lose that one thing, you lose everything, you know? But this is where cloud computing comes in as well.
To be fair, if you lose your wallet...
Yeah, but you still have your keys. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh well,
this is 14 ways to replace your wallet. They're actually basically saying 14 ways to replace everything. They're saying mobile payments, and this is something that Bill Gates actually talked about in his first book, which is the idea of a digital wallet. So instead of carrying money around, you would each have digital wallets, which would be your phone. And he didn't have these sort of phones back then, but I imagine your phone would be able to do this, where you would literally say, "You need $10." You just put your phones together and just transfer. Yeah. $10 from phone to phone. You're going to make a purchase. It's like the credit cards where you just wave it over the thing. You just hold your phone up to it. It would charge it, you know? And so you basically have a cashless society, because everything would be done digitally. Passports. They're saying, what about passports already have computer chips in them. What if we just digitized our passports and put them onto our phones? So you just basically wave your phone over immigration as you walk through. It's all digital. It's all there. Digitally stamped as you walk in. Keys is a perfect thing. So many cars have keyless entry and stuff like that. Just wave your phone over it. Your phone can act as your alarm trigger, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, contact exchange, no more business cards. Once again, things like Bump, the app where you can just transfer files. You just transfer your details straight over. Sending V cards. People do that via email today, sending V cards. Comparison shopping, people do that too. You walk in, barcode scan the device, it goes online, it checks all the other prices around town.
I hate you people.
You know, and you can find it out. What I love is the Amazon app is even better if you're in the States. It's not so good here, but if you're in the States, you walk into a shop, you go, I want that, you scan it, it brings it up, and then you hit buy.
You know? That's so brutal.
So, dude,
that's so mean.
And instant restaurant reviews. We're already doing that with the internet. Perfect Foursquare check-ins. That's if you use Foursquare. I don't use Foursquare. Easy tickets. Buy your movie tickets and stuff with your phone. You walk in the door. Your usher has some sort of collection device. You wave your phone over. It's done. Advertising. Well, we've seen enough advertising on our phone already. Dead simple bibliographies. Now, what are they saying about that? Tiny radio chips. Swipe your phone over it to generate perfectly formatted bibliographies. I don't see the benefit of that.
How that would be awesome.
Educated grocery lists. Now, this is actually something that the internet fridge was all about when it first came out as well. The idea is, so you have your fixed list of stuff that you would normally buy when you shop, right? So you go shopping. As you're buying it, you're marking them all off. As you use it, you mark them back in. And that way, when you go shopping, you know exactly what you're missing, what you're not.
Yeah.
With the internet fridge, it has scanners. So you take the milk out. If you use the last of the milk, you just swipe the scanner, and it tells you you need milk. You know?
Yeah, shopping list.
Fantastic. Medicine demystified. Well, yeah, we've already been seeing a lot of medical apps and stuff coming out. Pet tags. You know, they've all got the little tag in under their skin. You scan your phone. You can actually identify the animal, get the details. Less painful hospitals, they're saying, instead of wearing bracelets.
Yeah.
I don't see that one happening. The reason why we wear the bracelets is so if all other identification falls off of you, they can still figure out who you are. Yeah. But you could put a barcode onto it, and they could just scan over using whatever devices they use. Yeah. They actually have barcodes on them now. They just don't use them. Yeah. It's very weird. Anyway, so that was some ideas about where the future could lead us. And Josh and I, at this point, I'm going to say phone lines are open. I'm going to open up our Skype as well. So in case you guys want to call, hear us out before you call, though. And basically say that we sat down just before Christmas and started to talk about the future, basically. We started to talk about, you know, is the future of computing moving away from standard laptops and computers, and is it all going into some sort of more simplified system? The idea that people like us, who are comfortable getting into registries and stuff like that, wouldn't be needed anymore, you know? Because everything has now become this simplified, average Joe piece of hardware that they never have to see a line of code. They never have to see, okay, there's always going to be programmers. That's a slightly different thing because people have to make these. But even programming has become drag and drop nowadays with Visual Basic and stuff, you know? It's gotten to this point where have we simplified to a point where we've simplified ourselves out of existence?
No, because in my eyes, the nature of the way that we look at these things is that we think it's all really simple. But the average person on a day-to-day basis is not there yet. And there is still a huge place for people like us because there is a lot in between that still needs to be explained. And no matter how good we get at organizing computers, there are still plenty of ways for people to mess them up, especially if they don't know what they're doing. So, look, I mean, we haven't written ourselves out of existence, and we have a base understanding of why a program won't work or why something doesn't interact the way it's supposed to, or why a beach ball is spinning, whereas...
Excuse me. Bless you, sir.
Thank you. So we have an understanding of why all these things happen, whereas a lot of people don't. So I don't think techies are gone. We just are starting to go to places like working at Apple Genius Bars or something like that. Like, we've become a natural and normal part of life as opposed to the weird ones.
We've become the cool kids all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, and it's funny because you really have seen the change in the way that a geek looks now, because it's like we used to be the basement nerd that would hide away from people, and now it's actually kind of a normal job and a normal lifestyle to do this kind of thing. So we haven't written ourselves out of existence. We've just become, we've become a balanced part of it as opposed to being the scary basement person we used to.
And the neckbeard person.
Exactly. Right? You know, the realistic thing is that we are, we're useful, and we are, like, technology is now moving at a point where catching up is something that people have to do. It's not a question of if they want to. It's not like you buy a computer for word processing or you could just buy a pen and paper. It's now a matter of everything you do on a daily basis can be quicker if you own a computer. Or
fair,
mail.
That's fair, yes.
Yeah, or mail as another example. I mean, even a 60 to 90-year-old person can understand the benefit of not paying to send mail to their family across the world and not having to wait for it to arrive, it arriving instantly and stuff like that. It's like we've got to the point where technology is just too good to ignore. You know what I mean? And I think that because of that, we are kind of getting a real interesting...
Well, because I think about it, you know... We discussed in that the pre-Christmas conversation that about every 10 years is the next big thing, right? So in mid-1970s, it was homebrew computers and the Altair and the birth of the Apple One like that. In 1984, so mid-1980s, we saw the birth of the graphic user interface, the mouse, and computers becoming mainstream. Started becoming mainstream. 1995, and yes, I know, don't correct me, I know it was around a lot before that, but it became public consciousness, the internet.
Yeah.
Right? It was the birth of Windows 95 that really brought the internet to the forefront.
Damn right.
Right? And I can highlight this point by saying, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I went to America in March 1995. And the internet was like a couple of neckbeard people and my uncle who looked at, you know, an occasional picture which took half an hour to download, right? To, by the time I left America in November of 1995, every movie poster at the cinema had a URL at the bottom of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So in a space of literally 7 months, we just saw it explode.
Yeah.
Right? The concept of an internet-ready computer, where you bought a computer and actually had a modem and stuff with it, was suddenly in the vernacular, you know? Mm. So... that was that move.
Yeah.
The shift in what? The mid-2000s. What was the shift in the mid-2000s? There had to be one. There always is one. So
let's see. Around 2000...
2005 was gaming consoles were big news at that point.
Well, 2000 you kind of had... like, I mean, we just...
iPod. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely that. I was going to lean more towards what Frigg was saying, Windows kind of XP, which really did change. Windows XP made it more user-friendly.
Like, no, but think about it, though. They've actually got a very good point, though. Yes, Windows XP as well, but Windows XP was a generational build-up. The iPod generation, we're not talking about iPod itself. Yes, that was 2002.
Yeah.
The iPod generation, we were seeing the birth of smartphones. We were seeing the birth of portable devices.
Dude,
then
just watch the history of the iPod itself as it just kind of like grew from just a music player to a music player with a few games on it to the ability to do genius work and so on and so forth, playlist making.
Then we saw the birth of the first iPhone. I think you could actually argue that the mid-2000s was the mobile explosion.
Exactly.
That was the mobile explosion.
Well, it was where we started to take... No, it was the device explosion.
Device explosion.
It was so much more than just the music, you know, sort of things and portable phones and stuff like that. We had everything coming out smaller and more portable. Mm-hmm. We were obsessed with it. We were joking about it a couple of days ago. Remember those really fucking small phones where it's just like we became obsessed with trying... to make everything miniaturized. Yeah, it's like we would just...
the little tiny wafer phones. All right, so Josh, we've got a caller on the line. It's Delta. Delta, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. How you going, guys?
For those who are listening to the audio, this is Delta Knight, or David Murray, our researcher. How
nice,
are you, Delta?
It's nice to put, nice good. To put a voice to the face.
Oh, he's never spoken to him.
No. Yeah, exactly.
So what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I still think that everything around the 2000 mark, I totally agree with what you're saying, that everything became just so much more portable. It became the digital portable revolution, basically. I mean, iPods, PDAs, mobile phones, everything. That's when it started to explode, basically.
Yeah, and the interesting thing was, not only at 2000, but kind of as we sort of moved on throughout that period, even just before 2005, we got a very important device which changed the way that we stored things, which was flash drives.
Oh, flash drives,
now,
of
flash
course.
True, yeah. Flash drives became an important function for everyone.
Like, flash memory changed a lot. It changed how we stored music on our devices. It stores flash memory in general was just amazing.
And now every device you know is connectable via these portable devices.
Here's a good little anecdote for you as well to show you how fast technology moves on. My first flash drive was a 256 meg.
Yeah.
Beat that.
SanDisk. Wait for this. $299 to buy.
Wow.
It was like the holy grail of flash drives. A year later, you could pick them up for like $30.
Back in 2001, I bought myself a 32 meg flash drive for $50. It was one of the old laser ones. It was for like TAFE here in Canberra.
I got a great one for both of you if we're all going to play who's got the smallest. I had a music player which had an internal memory of 7 gigs.
Oh, 7 gigs? That's
no,
pretty...
sorry, 7 megs.
Oh, 7 megs. Okay.
7 megs, and then it was expandable to only 8 more megs.
That's such an unusual size, though.
I know, right? It was like some cheap branded one that I bought, but it was the cheapest thing I could find at like $200 price tag.
Yeah.
And it held like 9 songs.
I used to have this little Chinese knockoff MP3 player that had, I think it was 32... I think it was actually quite high. I think it was like 8 gigs, actually. I think it was 8 gigs. But it was tiny. It was about this big for those who are on video. It was like the size of a matchbox, you know, and completely useless.
Yeah.
These days, you can get flash drives or flash memory that is so small that you can put it into jewelry.
Yeah.
I've seen it in several different cases, like necklaces that have like a full USB, like, you know, 4 gig of storage just on a necklace.
Well, there's one on ThinkGeek right now, which is an 8 gig flash drive in the band of the watch.
That's it.
Dude, and we also have at work now in the, you know how you wear the like neck things? You've seen them at like places like JB Hi-Fi and Apple.
The lanyards.
The lanyards, that's what I'm looking for. We're inside the clip where you can separate the key part out from the thing.
Is a drive
in those. Yeah. It's like we've managed to fit technology into everything now.
Yes.
And it's great because... we are now getting to that point where we're starting to head into the future. And this is, of course, where we were actually supposed to be going. So we should probably
wrap up
the first part of it as quickly as we possibly could. But, I mean, from there we kind of moved through. And it's sort of like we started out with kind of MySpace in like the 2006, 2007 era. And social generation, for anyone that hasn't seen things like Social Network and stuff like that, was the explosion that basically became... a household appliance.
Also, we could argue that the mid-2000s was also the era where the computer became legitimate. Mm-hmm. It became the point where it became mass market.
Yeah.
It was no longer in our hands anymore. It was in the hands of mom and dad and, you know, the household cat. You know, they all had some sort of wireless device, you know.
But like I was saying in the chat room, though, these days I work in IT. I work in a very large government department, and all the IT engineers around me are all not geeks.
Yeah.
They're all car people or, you know, just general sort of people.
Yep.
Very few of them are geeks. I'm the only, pretty much the biggest geek there.
Yeah. We've got Zed is basically saying USB 3, and we've also seen flash drives that are wireless from Jay Raggy. That's actually the wireless. Flash drive. The wireless flash drives are actually this new wireless USB, which we saw a movie the other day, which they actually – I was – what was that? It was not a good movie. Unknown. Where they actually, it was kind of stylized for movie, but she throws what looks like a wireless USB, taps it onto his laptop, and then goes in the other room to actually access the data.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, I remember that
and
one.
You sit there, and first thing, I leaned over to Josh and went, wireless USB, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying that this was supposed to be the next big thing. Thunderbolt seems to have taken its fire out of the room. It took the oxygen out of the room. But a lot of people are saying the next big one will be wireless USB. This is going to be...
Yeah, well, I mean, like, technically, though, I don't actually agree with wireless USB, only from the point of view that I don't see how it's any different to household networking. It's like, it's just one device.
What wireless USB, though, I can see as a replacement to Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Because it'll be faster.
Yeah, but even so, it's like if you do it through a network.
Yeah, but could you imagine you're out on the road, you're doing whatever it is, you've got two iPhones that have wireless USB on them, and you use that Bump app, and it connects via wireless USB. That's going to be a lot faster to transfer something over rather than the Bluetooth that it's using now.
Yeah.
Well, also, what about optical media as well? A few days ago, I read an article on Wikipedia, of all things, talking about holographic optical storage.
Mm.
And these things have transfer rate of 960 megabits per second.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they can hold a capacity of something like a good, you know, couple of, I think it's about 500 gig or something.
What are they called in Star Wars? The holocrons or whatever they're called?
Yeah, holocrons. Yeah. These have some sort of, they're a disc type shape, but they have a gel inside them that the holographic lasers actually shoot into and record the information in the gel.
That's fantastic.
That's so cool.
There was all, and this is the future of stuff. There was also Intel at one point was working on new CPUs because at that point they had actually reached a point. This was actually going back to the mid-2000s. They're actually saying they reached a point where they literally felt they couldn't squeeze any more speed out of silicon. Well, they crossed that barrier, but they thought they couldn't squeeze any more speed out of silicon. And they were actually talking about making inert gas processors where they actually wrote the instruction sets onto gas molecules. And the gas would be in a little, basically a cube of inert gas.
Wow.
Because gas doesn't heat up, or it has a much lower or much higher tolerance to heat. So they could actually do this. And this was being experimented on for ages. So, and that would have been wild. Could you imagine?
I think we're all three of us can agree here in the room, being all three techies, that I think the biggest, the biggest step that we have to cross next, and the biggest bridge that needs to be crossed before we move into a new technology world, is to fix batteries. Like, batteries are becoming the number one problem with computers. I mean, like, if we can cross that barrier, like, and again, this is horrible because this is the business major in me talking when I say this, but the reality is that if you could cross that threshold and give me a 20 to 50 hour battery in a computer, you take away the possibility that I'll ever step away from that computer or device. It's
well,
like, bar from sleeping.
Bring on virus batteries. This is the next
big
thing.
But I'm saying that, like, for us
or hydrogen cells.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I want to walk around with a hydrogen cell in my back pocket.
It's slightly explosive.
We learned this with Zeppelins. All right? Let's not strap these things to ourselves. It was bad enough when they were flying over the top of us. But, it's just interesting because it's like we get to a point now and we've seen the refresh of Macs, and this is actually what brought on this whole conversational discussion between me and Dave originally, was the fact that the new MacBooks are such a step forward because it's more than just a computer upgrade. It's more than just people going, all right, well, let's make a computer which is faster or something like that. They've turned around and gone, what's the perfect concept of a computer? And they've got a drive which is literally solid state for your operating system, which you can't access apparently, or not via, you know, a normal person.
You'll be able to access it through Apple updates and stuff
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, exactly, but not but not actually like store stuff
once
on it.
Once again, this comes down to that future argument, which is things are becoming idiot-proof is what they're becoming.
Well, no, but this is what I'm saying. It's like for the average day-to-day user, you're creating a computer, which is something even we want. It's like they've turned around and gone, like a solid-state drive to separate out your thing, an i5 processor in a period of time where i5 is a really decent processor, not a dual core, like some of the last Macs. And then on top of that, you know, creating a decent graphic-based system using APUs, which is basically combining the CPU and GPU into one chip. It's like, by doing all of these things, we're creating computers that can be smaller, that don't heat up as much, that have less to screw up and break. It's like, we're stepping closer and closer to that concept of ruling out the possibilities of computers breaking down.
Yep.
And but idiot-proofing machines, though, will not work for everyone.
No, absolutely.
I mean, sure, for the general public, it is perfect because, I mean, we deal with idiots all day at work. All of us do. But for us techs, we like to be able to play with our tech. We like to be able to muck around with it, you know?
But my argument, unfortunately, towards you, dude, is that...
They're going to go where the money is.
Yeah, and number one, they're going to
go... True, yes.
Number one, they're going to go where the money is. And number two, on an average day-to-day basis, if you break down and separate tech people out, right? Like people like us, you separate them out. Apart from a very core, very small section that like doing either programming or writing programming or anything like that, the average user, even people like me, really don't need things outside being able to run, Photoshop and being
Word.
Able to and doing Word and stuff like that. All of the other stuff that I do on a computer hasn't really changed in the last 5 years. I can still access it.
In fact, I actually think over time I've actually started to use less programs than I used to use.
Yeah,
me too.
Exactly.
Or
because you don't. Yeah, but, well, that's exactly it, Delta. You don't need the stuff you used to use because there's something out now that can do the same
job. As an example, all right, and this is kind of inside baseball, and it was only for legitimate backup, I promise.
Yeah.
In the old days, though, if you wanted to put a movie onto your computer, right, you would put the DVD in, you would have to actually rip the DVD, which would actually require you to have decoders. The decoders would be installed, you'd have to have the ripping software, it would actually then transfer the entire contents to your hard drive. Then you would have to have software that would actually demux that video from audio, you'd have to encode both the audio, you'd have to encode both the audio and picture, you would then have to recombine those two into a stream. That's another piece of... You literally took about 7 pieces of software to rip a DVD into a computer file, right?
And yet, I did it last night with one program.
Exactly.
I was about to say, I did the same thing. One program took 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It was like, it was from Wodigo, from rip to finish, done.
Mine took 8 hours, but well, that was the
result. I got a pretty fast computer running over here.
me too. My problem was that dialogue box popped up halfway through the night, and it sat there for 8 hours.
Yeah.
So
that's a shame.
Different problem.
But the point is that we've simplified that process, and that happens constantly.
But we're simplifying everything, and this is my whole argument. It's like, I can understand why tech people like myself are kind of going, oh, you know, well, these sort of things aren't necessarily a good thing. But the problem is, we are in as Dave was starting out this whole conversation.
I was like, Jason Melvin in our chat room, they're talking about the DVD ripping. He goes, his computer is so slow, he might as well animate the movie himself.
Oh, that's great.
All right, so let's shift this into a different gear here and basically say, okay, so what is your prediction? We're heading here for 2015 at this point.
Yeah.
All right. What is the next big thing?
All right.
I actually reckon. Sorry, Josh. I didn't.
No, you go.
No. This is aimed at you, Delta, because we're going to start trying to take some other calls in as well. So, for you, what do you think the next big thing will be? What is the next shift? The next fundamental 10-year shift?
Personally, I would like to see LightPeak become standard.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, it's already on all the new Macs. So.
Exactly, but it's not going to be on PC for at least a year. And by that stage, then, sure, it's going to take a little while for it to evolve and stuff like that. It's not really a long-term thing. It's more of a short-term. But that would revolutionize multiple different storage mediums. The only problem is, I mean, for at least external hard drives and such, but the biggest problem is that hard drives are not going to be able to keep up. They're going to have to increase the speed of hard drives.
But
magnetic hard drives aren't going to keep up at all. Solid-state hard drives have to get a lot bigger.
And we have one other problem, though, which is why a lot of people are still storing on magnetic drives. Magnetic drives, believe it or not, after all these years, are still the most reliable storage method.
And the biggest.
The problem we have is that flash drives, can literally only be written to a finite number of times. Yes, it's in the hundreds of thousands, you know what I mean? But it is only a finite number of times they can be written to before they eventually will give out, you know what I mean? So we sit there and go, we need to come up with the next generation of that Flash. We need to find we need to find that next generation of Flash, which is the undisputed king of storage. And we haven't found that yet. We haven't found that undisputed king of storage. We're still using a technology that is, what, 15 to 20 years old? You know?
The thing is, we also have things like SATA 3, which are not, so far not being utilized very much at all. I have a SATA 3 hard drive in my PC right now, and it's a normal 1 terabyte Western Digital hard drive, but just has a faster interface. But it's not that much faster, and it's really not that much of a difference. We need to actually make a huge leap forward.
Yeah, I agree. All right, but now that's actually generational, that's evolutional of connections and so forth. What do you think the next big, throw this one to you, back to you one more time, what is the next big shift in mindset, though? You know, it's like as we said before, we've got one generation was the birth of computers, one generation is going to be the mainstreaming of computers, one generation is going to be portable device. What do you think the next big shift is?
I can really weigh in on this one, because you really are starting to see a shift in people wanting a different way to interact. A mouse and a keyboard is such an ancient concept that we really need to move past. Though I know that people are going to argue that it's still the best way to play games and stuff like that. I'm not saying it's going to disappear. What I'm going to say is the average user, the concept of moving technology forward outside what we want, but what's best for technology, is really leading towards touch and a system of kind of creating your household in a way that computers are just there, like a light switch. You know, it's just like it's there in front of you in every room of your house. And technology is getting cheap enough where you can organize this sort of stuff. Me and Dave have hundreds of computers in our houses. And so does everyone else, and including you, Delta, of course.
5 PCs, yep.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like, but getting that down to small
Freak
size...
says utilizing the Kinect interface.
No, but like I actually kind of agree with them. It's one aspect that is...
It's, no, the concept, though, is valid. It's that whole basically just being able to interact with our technology rather than...
It's the second part of what I'm talking about, because the technology part one is to get it in there, to get things like, and I hate to use them because they're horrible machines, but the HP Touch Smarts and things like that, computer mountable to the wall, having everything inside one unit. So basically doing what we're doing with iPads and iPhones and Zooms and all this sort of stuff, creating devices that can literally be put somewhere and then organized from there. So like, bam, computer's on the wall, it's connected to a wireless network. So networking is a huge thing. It needs to be household wide. It needs to be simplified to the point where anyone can set it up. We need to basically write out the concept of all this background code and basic, because, and don't say it can't be done, because it can be done.
Okay? Oh, easily. I mean, there are so many different home automation kits around these days.
Exactly.
That you can almost do that. Really just have to have a better interface. It has to be sort of cheaper.
It has to be simpler, and it has to remove the wires. Because wires are what people hate.
James Milman says he can program his PS3 with his PSP anywhere in the world.
It's done over Wi-Fi.
That's pretty cool. All right, let's let Delta Knight go, just in case there's any other calls coming in. Delta, thank you so much for calling in.
No worries. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Fantastic. And stick with us in the chat room. Just in case anybody else wants to call, I got to just clear the line. But so your major prediction for the future is better storage, faster connections, better interfaces.
I'd love to see hologrammatic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something like holodecks or hologrammatic interfaces would be fantastic as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, I think holograms are going to eventually replace the current 3D technology, but that's a whole different issue.
Thanks, Delta.
All right, thank you very much, Delta. We'll talk to you soon. All right, bye. Okay. All right, so that was Delta Knight. Anybody else who wants to call in, just a reminder that you can call in. Our lines are open right now. Boy, I sound like a radio show. the number is 801-1367.
It's on the screen right there. 801-1367.
And our Skype ID is Geek Actually, if you want to do it just via Skype. Okay. We've got another call. Okay, this is interesting. I don't know who this caller is. Let's find out. Hi, this is Geek Actually. This is David. Who's this?
It's Tristan. I'm Freak from the chat room.
Hey, Tristan. Hey. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
What are your thoughts about the future? What do you think the next big thing is?
I don't know. I think it's... I reckon probably faster processors and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, Yeah, go
at the moment, I mean, they seem to think that they're hitting their limits now, but I'm sure they've got the technology there where they can transfer data a lot quicker using light technology and laser technology and even bio, where they're getting little organisms to transfer data across from different platforms and different interfaces and all that.
Absolutely. Mm. One example, man, that I thought was quite amazing was we were reading only a little while ago that they've actually a company is developing a processor which has 48 cores, apparently being a faster processing system than the human brain.
Yeah, this is the one that was using Atom processors. It was like 48 Atom processors, all interlinked with each other.
So yeah, no, the technology is definitely a good place to head, because reality is once a processor can basically be self-controlled.
We're heading for the positronic brain is what we're heading
exactly. for. Exactly. And really interesting concept, and definitely is one of the key future points that we're going to.
Tristan, let me ask you, do you think that our next big thing is going to be self-aware computers?
Well, it's getting that way, because I sent you a link the other week where they had computers where they were able to teach each other in their own little network different things that they had learnt themselves.
Oh, God, that is scary.
That is scary. it's like that.
Of the way we go. We teach each other things and we get better and quicker and faster now.
Yeah,
and computers can do that.
If you remember, we did a story on tech, actually, I think it was many weeks ago now, where they taught a computer archery.
Yeah,
and it missed many times, but every time it got better until it finally hit the target, and then it hit the target every single time.
Well, I think Tristan's really onto something as well, because one huge thing about what you're saying that is really, really true is the fact that if you could teach a computer to understand how it works and how how it interacts with itself, you could then basically rule out the need for someone like me. Because basically, if a computer can sit there and go, you've got to stop doing that because you're wrecking my system. Exactly. And teach itself to get rid of viruses, teach itself to know what's coming into its system that it should monitor in and out.
And
that's a really important part.
Could we assume that Watson is a step in that direction?
Oh, absolutely.
IBM's Watson.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes, there you go.
Now all they've got to do is make it so I don't have to fill up one of the rooms in my house.
They'll get there. Look at the computers 20 years ago, 30 years ago. They were as big as rooms.
Yes.
And Watson's as big as a room now.
Look at the computers in World War
I. It's probably as small as our desktop PC.
Absolutely. Exactly. I was going to say, one of our problems has never been miniaturization. Once we get something to work, making it smaller comes very quick.
Absolutely.
You've got to look at the technology they've got now. They've got graphene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's only just been discovered, and they're using it everywhere right now. They've got batteries. They've got processors. Silicon is at its limit now.
Oh, absolutely.
They've gone as thin as they can with silicon, where it's got to the point where electrons are flowing through past the thin wafers of silicon.
Yeah.
And now they've got to find something else that will stop that, and they're looking at graphene as being that solution.
Yeah, we actually did a story on that in tech, actually, where we said graphene was the new zinc oxide, remember? It was becoming the thing that was going to be the go-to thing.
Absolutely.
The other thing is, I noticed in the chat room a while back, I just didn't get to it, but a while back they were talking about the reason why batteries are the size that they are is because, electrons have to be pushed through it. It can only get to a certain size because you need to be able to move those electrons. Bottlenecking.
Absolutely.
Last week we did that story about those people who are developing light technology to move, rather than electrons, moving the information and things like batteries and so forth, using photons, using light rather than electrons.
Yeah.
So we're moving in that direction. We're moving in a direction which is actually going to make things faster. It's going to make things smaller. It's just coming up with the ideas to start with. That's the trick.
Absolutely.
Well, I've got the ideas there. It's just that putting them into practical use and making them to an affordable price, that won't be there for another 10, 15 years.
Absolutely.
Well, if we keep going with Moore's Law, things are doubling in speed, and we could extrapolate on that and say we're shrinking double in size every year. Once again, the iPad 2 is thinner, it is lighter. It's like
we're also getting to the point where we're starting to be aware that there is a point where you stop trying to make it smaller and start making it more practical. It's like it's that great period of time where we stopped trying to make phones smaller and started going, well, if 2.4-inch screen is a great size, let's take that and make the resolution on it better.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And we're getting to the point where we're learning all these things that we made mistakes with at the start. So, it's kind of like you say, we've got a practical idea of it.
Mm. Go ahead.
Well, that's what I got annoyed with. With my phones, they got smaller and smaller. I bought an 8210. I could not use it because my fingers were far too big to press all the buttons. Now I've got a HTC Desire HD with a massive 3-point-something-inch screen or whatever size it is. bigger than the iPhone, and I can actually press the buttons and use it now.
I agree 100%.
My wife's iPhone, I can't use it because I find the screen buttons a bit too small for me. So.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting as well because, like, what you're just saying there is we had this mindset that we followed the trends as technological fans. We followed the trends as it got smaller and smaller until the point where you'd be sitting there trying to watch a video on your phone, which was powerful enough to run it, and kind of look at it going, it's a bit small.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, it is. I was telling Josh before we started this whole thing, an old boss of mine back in the late 90s came in with his brand new mobile phone, and he was so proud. The thing was literally the size of a matchbox and as thin as, I don't know, a pack of gum, and yeah. He would hold it with two fingers to make a phone call. And I'm sitting there going, what a practical use is that in any way, shape, or form?
You have to have a pen just to press the buttons.
It was just stupid. It's like, it reaches a point where it's not about just making it smaller, it's about making it useful.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to be useful.
But we've learned that now.
Yeah.
We've learned that, and that's something that I'm really glad of, because I think in the future that's really going to help.
Guys, I've really got to go. My son's crying.
No problem. Thanks for calling in, Tristan. It's fantastic to hear your voice.
All right.
See you later. All right. See you later. Bye. All right. So that was Tristan. Hey, if you want to call in, remember our phone number is 02-801-13167, or Geek actually is the Skype ID. You're welcome to call. Phone lines are open. We've only got probably a few more minutes because we've got a few things to get through yet. But if you do have what you think the next big thing in computers is, please call it in. We'd love to hear from you. This is the fundamental shift, the paradigm shift, as they would say. Every 10 years, we have that paradigm shift. What is the next big thing? I think one of the big things is going to be the death of brick and mortar. I think it's going to be to the hindrance of humankind. Yeah. We really do need shops. We do need people. We've discussed it at the head of the show, but I think we are getting to a point where everybody is so weirded out about, you know, doing everything online that the shops are suffering and closing. And then what's going to happen? We're going to miss them.
Well, to be honest, it's all kind of comes down to the unfortunate nature of the fact that people are very obsessed with the concept of getting the cheapest price. And like, though I can understand that, it's like certain stores can't afford to do certain things yet. They can't show a face that says they can't, so a lot of companies are losing money this way. I'm actually not worried about the death of brick-and-mortar stores, because when that does happen, you will see a mad increase in the need for tech people. You will see a mad increase for people basically turning around and going, we need someone to come out to my house, or someone where I can go to learn how to use this device. Mm-hmm. And that'll just be where I'll end up. So it's like the death of brick and mortar will happen, but I think the counterpoint to that will be a whole lot more people that you can go see.
Do you think it's going to be one of those situations? I was thinking about this the other day. Do you think it's going to be one of those situations where we make the big mistake and then we have to then basically reverse it? What'll happen is all these major stores are going to close because they can't sustain it, because everybody's gone online to shop. And then what's going to happen is in 5-10 years later, people will say, I really miss shops, and then slowly retailers will start to reopen.
No, what you'll see is what you'll probably see is you'll see retailers start to open up as brand companies. So you'll see Dell stores or Apple stores or whatever, and also you'll probably see a mad increase of small corner store computer stores again. Because it's like, if you're going to kill off brick and mortar, the people that can still buy the parts and put the computers together.
Callisynth in our chat room says, I think that not all brick and mortar stores will go away. I think the ones that offer great service combined with an online store will thrive.
Exactly.
That's a very good point. Yes.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
That means you could buy it online, but if you needed to take it in, you could take it into the
store.
Exactly.
Which is what I mean, like those kind of Dell stores or whatever. It's like the concept of having a company sell the computers and also have the support in store that people can go see, and creating a system where it's not about the cutthroat sales of the industry, but do it like an Apple model, which is that when you go into the store, these people are just there to help you, just nothing else. That is their day-to-day job. They are there to make your life easier using a computer.
Yep.
And I think there's absolutely no reason why those stores can't absolutely thrive. I think those stores are the future, where it's like you go to them, because it's always been said, and I think...
I think what you're about to say is, I think the model for the future store is what some people are going to find horrible, but it's true. I actually don't find it horrible. I think the model for the future store is the Apple Store.
Oh, dude, I think that is
the model.
As someone that works there, it takes away all the pressure and means that I would be a much nicer person to people, because it's like, realistically, all I have to do is help people. I'm no longer bound to need to make sales. I don't need to make extra money on top of it. I get a set paycheck, and I'm in there to help people with computers. I would be 100% happy with that.
Yeah. And people coming in know exactly what they're coming in for.
Exactly. They show up at the store to either buy the product or learn how to use the product.
Or convert to the product or whatever. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I think the future of retail is probably in that sort of model. Not the Apple Store as such, but that model.
Freak said it best. Tristan in the chat room said their knowledge support should be what counts.
Absolutely. And that's true. And that's what used to happen. When I worked at I managed a video, like a rental video store for years and years and years when I was a teenager through to my 20s. And we were renowned. We were very successful because everybody who worked there, we knew about movies. And people would come in and they would ask our advice and we could always help them. You go into a video library a few years later, I remember going into places like Blockbuster and someone say, do you have such and such? And they look at you and go, huh?
Yeah.
What's that? Who's
I'll
that?
I'll check
you know?
The computer.
I'll check the computer. It's like, no, you know, I want somebody knowledgeable behind the counter who knows their stuff. All right, we're running really long today, so we're just going to fly through. We didn't cover everything. We might actually open this discussion up over the next couple of weeks because it's a big topic and there is a lot of stuff. So we'll come back to it. But we just need to cover up a couple of geek points and then our apps of the week, and we'll get out of here and get out of people's hair because we've kind of went straight off into all these different directions. First of all, I just want to say very quickly, Penthouse, good for them. Penthouse Magazine has launched their first 3D TV channel. Only in England, only in Europe, though. I want it here. God damn it. I'd buy a 3D TV for that.
That's incredible.
Penthouse 3D porn 24 hours a day. All right. Cheers. Forget motion controllers. Here comes voice controllers. Apparently, now I'm just going to get this right. Is this PlayStation or is it Xbox? I think it's PlayStation, actually. Basically, you use your microphone and you control the game by when you want to shoot, you go pew, pew, pew. It says you have voice input. 360, sorry. It's Xbox 360, controlled by voice input. One player controls the Space Rangers jetpack, presumably. It says in the article, which is on Geekology, it says presumably by blowing into the air into the microphone, going... Right? I don't know if that's true or not. And the other person controls his laser blasters by going pew, pew, pew.
That would be the best two-player game ever.
How awesomely fun would that be?
We'd have to record us playing that game.
Gotta find out what game it is to actually play it. I think it'd be funny as hell.
Oh, dude, we are totally, totally getting that.
All right, so we also have to say that that necessity is the mother of all inventions.
Yeah.
And Geekology, we won't go into details, but the link is here because we're running really late. But the link is here for you to look at. Last week, we reported on the anti-laser, and we said they developed shields, basically. Anti-laser, we said, that's great, but there's no lasers. Well, the U.S. Navy has now developed a high-powered laser weapon. So
awesome.
So it's like, we got shields, we better have a laser for it.
How well does it work?
I think it's still in development at this point. So, but I think that's very funny that we've got the shields before we got the actual laser. We'll just have a quick look here in the article. As I say, the full article is there for you to have a look at. It says, seen here looking at, this is the actual partially constructed laser weapon in the picture you can have a look at here.
Good Lord.
Is capable of producing a sustained 500 kilovolt beam of total destruction.
Oh, dude, that's fantastic. We have laser guns.
We got a laser weapon, dude. It's probably
and as you said less than 5 minutes ago, once we have the technology, it's just a matter of making it smaller.
That's right. At the moment, it's probably the size of a battleship. Soon, it'll be a hand blaster, all right? Yeah. Now, we're also going to just say very quickly that, first of all, we all know that Egypt had the big protests and Facebook and Twitter were the big like saviors there. People negotiated. Libya at the moment we know is under a lot of unrest at the moment. There's a lot of protesters. The reason why I bring it up is not to get political. The reason I'm bringing it up is because I just found it very interesting in this article that they're not using Facebook and Twitter. Apparently in Libya, the big meeting place, the way that they've been organizing all the protests and stuff is through dating sites.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was really interesting. Apparently, they've been hooking up through a dating site called Mawada, and they've been creating fake accounts and going in to these dating sites and chatting to each other there so they wouldn't be detected and stuff like that, which I think is genius. My only question is, can we please not have Libyans then start calling their babies Mawada?
Yeah, please
okay?
No.
Please don't do that. That was a bad idea calling that child Facebook. Okay. Yeah. And last but not least, just our geek out section. Last but not least, in our geek out, normally we take a lot more time on this, but we went too long in that other section. If you don't believe in therapy,
okay,
there are many people out there who don't believe in therapy. this therapist in our show notes might change your mind. Kind of. This is Sarah White. She's 24 years old, and she does nude therapy. She sits there and talks to you on a Skype camera. Now, hold your comments. She talks on the Skype camera, and as your therapy session goes on, she slowly takes off all of her clothes. I think I've had therapy like that before. Now, as it turns out, believe it or not, she's not a qualified therapist.
Oh my God.
And apparently, real therapists, licensed therapists, are basically saying, we don't really condone this practice.
How bizarre.
So, in other words, she says her argument to this is that Freud used free association, she uses nakedness. I see the correlation there.
You don't even care what the, if people want to go there, they can go there. So, you know what? Realistically, it'll probably cost you about the same amount of money.
Apparently, the initial session, which costs $150, she conducts via one-way webcam. So, yep. I'm not sure how the therapy actually works there. One-way webcam for $150. I've actually lost it now. Where I've lost my spot. Here it is. Conducted on a one-way webcam chat. Once she develops a rapport with the client, she'll move on to a two-way video appointment via Skype, and then even in person.
Oh, wow. So she even comes out. Where's she based?
I think it's England, actually.
Oh, wow.
Those wacky English people, I think. I could be wrong about the location, but yeah.
Is that her?
I don't know if that's actually her, but I would assume it's her. Doesn't say it's not.
Well, there you go. That would be a very interesting therapy session.
I don't know if I want to spend...
I don't think you'd get much therapy done.
I don't think
you'd be thinking a lot about... therapy at that point in time.
It says here in the article on Geekology, if you want, you can hit the link at the bottom. It says, hit the link for a painful strip interview with Little Miss Bullshitter. Anyway, so, yes, she's not a licensed therapist, but if you want to see a girl get naked, $150. I think there's cheaper ways to see a girl get naked.
I think so as well.
I think there's a cheaper way. Okay.
Yeah.
Weird geek food this week is kind of an odd one. We do have one more quick story, which is quite important, but weird geek food I'm just going to throw in here really quickly because I just thought it was very odd. Bananas.
Yeah.
Nature's naturally packaged fruit.
Right. Yeah.
Right? You know, you just peel it off and your banana's inside. Del Monte in America has decided that they need to plastic wrap their bananas. And I thought that this was already kind of an odd thing. Yeah. But the part that makes it the weird food is that they've actually said... they also can have put into the package a controlled ripening technology. So in other words, it's full of chemicals to keep this thing from going rotten.
Oh.
So we've packaged nature's packaged fruit and then thrown some chemicals into the mix to make sure it doesn't go wrong. I'm sorry, this is wrong. If you're going to buy a banana, just buy a banana. It already has a wrapper.
That's special there.
That's pretty special. All right, here's our last piece of news, and then we're going to get into our picks of the week, which we'll have to do fairly quickly, unfortunately. But our one last story is that in Australia, we've done it again. We banned another game, all right, because we don't have the R rating. And yes, we could get into a whole debate about this, but you know all about our feelings on this. However, there's a wrinkle in this story. You can't put advertising on the skin of a banana, says Delta Knight. Yeah, you put stickers on it. That's what everybody else does.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. They've got their package advertising all over.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mortal Kombat, the new Mortal Kombat game, has been banned in Australia. Yes, apparently they have issued a, what's it called? Appeal.
Yeah.
It'll probably eventually get put through. But at the moment it's banned because we still don't have this stupid R rating, which everybody supports, including the federal government. But for some reason, we still don't have it.
Yeah.
That's a whole issue for another show. All right. Maybe we'll do a call-in show on censorship at some point. But the point is that while Mortal Kombat was being banned, we got a new game coming out, which... let me just show you the ad. Okay, now for our audio listeners, I'm going to abridge this. It's about a minute and a half, but there's very little talking. It's mostly music, okay? So for our audio, this will be a little bit abridged. You can find the link in our show notes to watch this, and I'll explain what it is when we come back. So here we go. Tell me what you want is a little bit of money, and I'm sure that's true, but I'll tell you something, honey. I've got love and that'll make you feel.
feel just as hard. You see, my friend Joe, it doesn't matter where he goes, but he always has a laugh.
Oh, dude, it's talk. So embarrassing. Love in his heart and a smile on his face that sets him right.
If you could see that, babe, there's more to life. But they look so uncomfortable.
Of course they do. No one's ever comfortable during this situation. It looks so simple. Like, oh, God. I don't know.
All right, so that's that. Oh, turn that down. That is the ad for a new game called We Dare, which is basically a party game for adults. There is nothing sexual in the game. Let me make this very clear, all right? It was passed in the UK with a PG rating. It has been passed here in Australia with a PG rating. It is basically a party game for adults where, you know, what you're seeing in the trailer there is they play things like where you're bobbing for the apple, but you hang the Wiimote between them, and they have to kind of, the movement of you guys kind of kiss the, I don't want to use my Wiimote after two people have been trying to lick my Wiimote, though.
Dude, and more importantly, can I just bring up the thing, if there's nothing sexual in this, I would love to see a 13-year-old sitting across another 13-year-old's lap spanking each other.
No, I mean, I know what I mean by there's nothing sexual, you know, there's nothing sexual, no sexual content
but
in
I'm
the game.
Sorry.
The what's content, happening on screen is
yeah,
like little cartoon characters and stuff.
But what you're being asked to do should be measured the same
that's
way
right. The game, the game itself, though, is sexual in nature because what it's actually getting you to do is do these party games in yeah. reality. So it should be rated at an yeah. adult rating because of what its connotations
yeah,
are.
Yeah, freak. I understand it's implied, but the reality is it appropriate for a 12-year-old person to do those
to do
actions?
To do spank each other it, and do strip
like,
teases.
Like, I mean, is that something that you want 12-year-olds to... What? Gotta be careful with your phrasing there. What do you mean? Zed, I don't quite understand what you mean.
Anyway, he'll come back to us on that. The point is that we actually have a reversal of fortune, it would seem, because for the first time in a long time that I can think of, this game's been banned in the U.S., which I thought was really odd. Now, it will come out in the U.S. because they've got much better Bill of Rights, and they'll pass it, and they'll eventually get it through. But the basically the moral right went berserk over this because the Wii is supposed to be a family console. Yeah. And they basically went, what the hell?
Well, like, I just...
I want to see a 13-year-old spanking a 13-year-old. Yeah, you probably should rephrase
it.
No, he actually said you don't want to see.
Yeah, I said I don't want to. I just think...
Go get him, Dano.
Yeah. I don't... I really think that it doesn't matter what the game has inside as content. The reality is when it's a console based on personal interaction, it should be based around this. But this comes back to our wonderful...
the Puritan nature of how we think about sex in this
forget
country.
That. The classifications board we have in this country is the problem.
We need to redo the entire classifications board. There's no doubt about that, and that's an open argument for well into another show because we're way over. Yeah. But the point is that Mortal Kombat is banned. This game has been released. I'm waiting for the backlash on this. I feel like I need to go out and buy a copy of this game just to have it. Because it's going to get banned. You watch. This game is going to get banned.
Yeah.
I'm curious as hell about this. Not that I'm going to play it. I think it looks stupid, quite frankly. And I don't really need help in that department. Thank you very much. You know?
Yeah. I think Freak's got it right. I don't have a problem with this game. But I do have a problem with the fact that it's PG-13.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying here. It's like,
it's
can do whatever you want.
It's a mature title. For mature games.
Yeah.
And the mere fact that at the end of that trailer they have the parental lock codes come up at the end would say that this isn't for children.
Yeah.
You know? And it's what it's asking you to do in the game.
Yeah.
Like spank each other, strip for each other, you know, kiss each other. But this is not suitable for the children.
Yes, and yet a 13-year-old or even less, an 8-year-old could walk into a store and buy this.
That's the point. It's not for children, but the rating makes it so that they can buy it.
It's accessible to children, which is funny because this is exactly what we're arguing about our whole reanalysis of the classification board is the fact that things like this shouldn't be able to happen.
I have no problem with the game being available.
Yeah,
I just think we need to redo the. And I once again, I have no problem with R ratings or anything else. My argument has always been we need a good rating system so people have guidelines as to what rating, what age it is appropriate for. I don't think it should be banned.
Man, seriously, if this thing goes public and like people start complaining about it in this country, I'm going to sign the petitions.
Me too. Look, and Callis has said, I applaud someone for making an adult game for the Wii. Me too. Make more of them. Make full-on sex games. Shake the Wiimote like you're masturbating. I don't care. That's not the issue.
The issue is that it should be for people of the age group, not That's for correct. Underages.
It's also coming out on PS3 Move, apparently. And I'll make you a bet. It'll be a little bit more grown up on the PS3 because it's a more grown up console.
Yeah. And they can't use those cute little Wii things, which will probably change it.
Absolutely. Look, we're running way over, so let's do this really quickly. In our iOS apps of the day, I've actually got David Murray again, Delta Knight, actually sent me two emails this morning. One of them I've already installed, and one of them I have not installed yet. So we'll just run through his picks really quickly. He says, hi, Dave and Josh and the chat room inhabitants. I've got an app for the iPad that I would like to tell everyone about. Very early this morning when I couldn't sleep, I was watching some Big Bang Theory, and it's an episode where Sheldon was playing Zork 1. Since I was more than a bit of a late bloomer when it came to the computer games, my parents wouldn't let me play computer games when I was a kid. I never played any of the Zork games or many others of that matter, which he's talking about text adventure games, right? He says, I quickly found a copy I could download for free, but right away I started to have trouble getting the game to work on my modern gaming PC. I thought there's got to be a better way, so I had a look in the app store on my iPad. The app is called Frotz, F-R-O-T-Z, and it has the MIT version of Zork. It also has several other text-based adventure games on it. It is totally free. It is also a universal app. I know I downloaded it this morning. Thank you very much, Delta. And it may take a little while to install since it is about 50 megabytes. That's actually quite small. Go install Myst and you'll know what I'm talking about. Anyway, see you guys on Saturday. And as always, geek on. Thank you very much. And then he sent me another email and said, hi, guys. Here's another app for the movie geeks in us all. It's called TV Plus Movie Guide Australia. It has dual uses. The app is both for seeing what's on TV and all the current channels out there, as well as movie session times for cinemas in your area. It also shows coming soon, new releases, and top 10 movies of the weekend. The app is a couple of dollars, but it's quick, and it fills a need that he has geek on. I wouldn't have had a look at that app. I will get that app. I'm just going to make a decision because I'm a little bit annoyed by it, Delta, because it's available on both iPhone and iPad, but it's not a universal app, and I think that's a bit rough for what it is because it is just an information thing. So I've got to make the decision as to which one I want to buy.
Yep.
But they're the same price. They're about $249, I think, yes. Or something like that. Anyway, those are his choices. Josh, what do you got for us?
All right, well, I have one which you might have actually just heard as I turned my phone on to try and find the app that you were just talking about, which is that you will all remember the incredible praise and written review that I actually gave the game Gabe Dev Story, which has now become an absolute sensation. 5 stars, 500 ratings online, and this is just the Australian store. This game is absolutely mind-bogglingly fun, and basically everyone I have passed it to just sits down on the couch and just disappears for a while into the game, which is fantastic. Good on them. But the company that does it has now brought out their second game, Karoko Soft or something like that. They have now brought out Hot Springs Story, which is
this looks hot.
Their second game. No, but seriously, it is a really cool game. It is for strategy. I'm interested to find out. And
Karoo Soft.
Thank you. Has actually managed to break up everything that they did in the first game, jumble it up, rearrange it, put it back together, more fixed, more reliable, more programming in it. Like, they've really kind of like filled in all the gaps, little tiny things that you couldn't do. It was a very basic piece of software. They've really stepped that up, but realized, because they are a very smart games company, they basically turn around and go, what worked in our last one? Let's do it again, but make a little bit more inside it. And as Callison says, he's been playing it this whole time.
It looks and feels like Theme Hospital. I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, it's like three. I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning playing this last night, and I am very much looking forward to starting again, because there is just so much in this game to do, and it's only $5 on the moment. It's on special. My other game is that for anyone that was an Atari child or someone that may have had Atari emulators, you might know a game called Speedball 2, which is fantastic and has just been released to the iPhone, which is just awesome because this game was fantastic. It was like a sports game, but something I actually enjoyed. It's kind of somewhere between Rollerball and, I don't know, like Death games. I don't know. It's like Death Race meets Rollerball and slammed into a game. It's fantastic fun, and yeah, you should definitely definitely give it a try because it's really good.
Fantastic. All right, my pick is actually a puzzle game because I like puzzle games. It's free. It is a universal app. It works both on iPad and iPhone. It's called Sand Slides. And basically it comes up with three poles of sand at the top, and you have to draw slides to get the sand into the appropriate containers at the bottom.
Oh, nice.
And it's a lot of fun. And let me tell you, once you start playing, it's hard as hell once you get into it, okay? It's first few things you go, oh, this is easy. And then it starts getting harder and harder and harder. So have a look at that, Sand Slides, and it's free. I've just been yelled at by our chat room from James from Melbourne saying, what about Sir Dave, and how could this not make it into the Geek Show? Because we're running out of time, but I'll bring it up really quickly. Yes, Smodcast, Kevin Smith's network of podcasts, is going 24 hours and live.
Oh, wow.
It's called the Smodcast Internet Radio Station. It's going to be exclusive through Stitcher. And basically, it'll be 24 hours, but they're going to do live broadcasts and repeats of their entire catalog stuff to get started. The most important thing about it, though, is several months down the track, they're going to start taking submissions for other people's stuff to go onto it. And my first thought was, hi.
ooh,
you don't have a tech show. Take us. Anyway, so yes, I'm well aware of Sir. It hasn't launched yet, though. It's another reason why I wasn't really mentioning it, because it hasn't launched yet. Yeah. But I'm really eager to listen. I'm a huge Smodcast fan, huge Kevin Smith fan. We all know about that. But yes, thank you, James, and stop yelling at me. All right, we're going to get out of here because we are way long. This is the first two-hour geek. Actually, we've done a long time. We're done Picks of the Week. Right, if you disagree or agree with anything we have to say, or you want to throw in your two bits about what you think about our next big technological breakthrough is going to be, send it to feedback at geekactually.com. Or remember, you can leave us voicemail. We'll play them on the show if they are less than a minute long, preferably about 30 seconds, and on point, okay? You can leave us voicemail, 02-8011-3167, or our Geek Actually ID on Skype is Geek Actually, all one word. Mm. Feedback at geekactually.com is the email address. Get merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Tumblr accounts, find us, email us, do any of that, give us money, donate to us, whatever. Just go to geekactually.com. You will find everything at geekactually.com. Remember, for those who are listening to the audio podcast only, you can watch us live. We took calls today. We're probably going to start doing that more often. That was fun. We'll take calls more often and so forth. If you watch us live every Saturday, Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, we start around the 12 o'clock mark. We're always here before 12, but we start the show around the 12, sometimes 10 past, sometimes quarter past.
Ish. Favorite word.
It's 12 p.m. ish. Go to geekactually.com/live. There is a chat room that you can get involved in. You can watch us live. Today, if you're listening to the audio podcast, you don't know about the mistakes that we made where we forgot headphones and stuff. So, you know, you won't see any of that. You'll see all of that sort of stuff if you watch it live. All right. and last but not least, we'll just throw out a quick couple of thank yous and friends and say hi-de-hos to weekendronin.com, which is the home of the Real Junkies podcast. They're really good friends of us. Lots of love this week from them. We love you too, guys, in a purely masculine plutonic way, but we love you a lot. Real Junkies Podcast, R-E-E-L. It's a movie podcast where they get drunk. It's a lot of fun. All right, so listen to them, weekendrun.com. Also, Josh has another podcast.
Yes, rawdlc.com. It's a gaming website. Come check us out. We have awesome amounts of fun talking about games and getting angry about things in gaming we don't like. Go check out the website. Dave has been an absolute maniac with posts this week. He's chucked up like 5 or 6. So go and check some of them out. There's some really interesting videos and also a breakdown of his Brink experience overseas, which is really good. And also don't forget there is Arbiter Magazine if you are in the chat room and haven't already signed up for it. If you go to the top right-hand side of geekactually.com, you can sign up for the subscription.
I'm also going to build an Arbiter page, so it'll be much easier to find, but it's not there yet. So.
Okay, well, that will happen eventually, but for now, go to the front of the website. But after that, there is also coming up very soon a third issue, which will be full of also awesome things and wonderful speeches about things we don't like and things that we do. So, yeah.
Cool. Excellent. And with that, I think we're going to wrap this up. We're going to say Delta Knight's favorite phrase. I think we've only got two more, and then we'll just claim it as our own. We said once we had to say it about 5 times, and then we just take it. In the meantime, what Delta always likes to say is geek on, everyone. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now.
We'll be right back.